Good afternoon. We're going to call taxes to order. It's March 7th, and Representative Mullery is with us. And Representative Mullery, we want to start with your bills. I know you're in another committee, so hopefully we can just go through them. We don't have a quorum to move them yet, so if when we do, we will. So, Representative Mullery, do you want to take which one of the bills you want to start with?
Your choice, Madam Chair.
Well, let's see. How about if we do House Bill 805, the gift tax bill? Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This would restore the gift tax in Minnesota, and we always used to have one, and then I believe that we got rid of it at the time of the, I'm not sure, but Mr. Michael would know, the time of the unification, and where we just transferred to a pickup tax, but I'm not sure about that. Anyhow, it would, when I started practicing law, we had a gift tax on everything, just about a very low minimum. But what this would do would, this would create basically a gift tax with a roughly a $1 million in essence exclusion, and that would be in addition to the annual exclusions, which are about $14,000, I believe, right now under federal law. We would comply with that, so basically we're setting it about the same as federal law, and that would be let's see what other things on gifts in contemplation of death, that those would be included. We would not be picking up, however, generation skipping gifts, which I believe are actually taxed under federal law, but we would not be picking that up. And we also wouldn't be picking up gifts to charities and spouses. It would be a 10% tax on the taxable gifts. And basically what it does is it presents a tax and then gives a credit, which is the equivalent of just giving an initial $1 million exemption. And the amount of the gift tax paid is a credit against the Minnesota state tax on those gifts that are in contemplation of death. That's just a simple explanation of the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mullery. Is there anyone who wants to testify for or against this bill? Questions from committee members? I know we don't have a quorum yet, but Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just first of all, a comment. The last night, the research, I know the research summary was done, but the research summary was not on the website. So if you could just have staff check and see what happened. I don't know if there was something going on, but the revenue note was not online last night, and I was connected to the internet, so I don't know. If we could just have someone look into it, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, well, the revenue estimates come from the department, not from anybody in the House, not partisan staff or nonpartisan staff. They come from the Department of Revenue, and I see they're here, so maybe later they can tell us why the revenue estimate for this bill wasn't available. So we can find out later.
No big deal. It's not like it's a reoccurring theme. It's just that...
Mr. Michael can explain it.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, I'm just guessing, but I know it was emailed to me last night by not the normal person who emails revenue estimates. So I think it was not done until after the support staff, who probably posts these things to the web for the revenue department, had left for the day because it was after 5 o'clock at night. So I'm guessing that that's the reason why it was not. This morning I checked and it wasn't.
So. Madam Chair, I don't mean to be doing this publicly. Obviously, I know our staff works very hard. It's just that some of us still read the bills the night beforehand and look at this stuff in advance. So just to the degree that can, whatever the department can do, I don't need any feedback on it. So that'd be great.
Great, thanks.
For staff, just a quick question on the my understanding is that when someone makes a gift that is subject to federal taxation, that showed up as taxable income on the state income tax return. I must be mistaken. Can you explain the discrepancy of what this bill does versus that false understanding I have?
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, gifts, there's an exclusion in the income tax for gifts. So if you receive a gift from someone, that's not considered to be taxable income to you. What's involved here is the transfer tax obligation that's imposed on the donor of taxable gifts, which, as Representative Mullery said, are in, under current federal law, are gifts that exceed the $14,000 per recipient annual exclusion, or gifts of future interests without regard to that exclusion. So if you give somebody a gift in trust that's contingent, that doesn't trigger until some future event, even though it may have a value of less than $14,000, that's taxable right away. But in general, it's not taxable income to the recipient. It's we're talking about the tax on the donor.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative
Garofalo. So just give a hypothetical here. Let's say that my friend Representative Moline here wants to cash in some taconite royalties. She likes me so much that she gifts me $20,000. Can you just explain what would happen under current law, who pays the tax, and under this proposal?
Representative Garofalo, and does I think this is critical for this bill, does Representative Moline then die later? Because that's a big, we want to understand the scenarios. If she lives, if she dies.
Maybe we'll use a different example.
Okay. But, we've got the deathbed gifts part here. But, Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, under present law, there is no Minnesota gift tax. So all we're talking about is the federal gift tax. And under that circumstance, Representative Moline's gift to you would be a taxable gift because it's above, as you created the hypothetical, above the $14,000 annual exclusion. So it then would fall, it would be the responsibility of Representative Moline to file a federal gift tax return and report that gift to you. So in other words, it would be the $6,000 difference that she would report on that return as a taxable gift to you. That, and she would have, she has, everyone has under federal law, a $5.2 million annual exemption, or not, lifetime gift tax exemption. And so essentially by filing that return, what she would do is to draw down her $5.2 million gift tax exemption, and it's only by the point she's filed enough returns to get over that $5.2 million threshold that she would then begin having an obligation to pay gift tax to the federal government. Under Representative Mullery's bill, that threshold would be $1 million rather than the $5.2 million indexed under the federal. So after she'd filed enough returns at the state level to get above the $1 million, not just on gifts to you, but to gifts to everybody, then she would start paying tax. But it wouldn't be taxable income to you. You could keep the whole amount and spend it.
And Madam Chair, just so I understand, again, I wanted to read this last night and I couldn't. So if a person, the giver, it's the state of residency of the donator, not the recipient, that would trigger this. So if a person moves to Hudson, then this is not something that would apply to them. Or if they move to a state that does not have a gift tax in law, they would not have to pay this.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, in general, yes. If in the Representative Moline Garofalo example, that would be true because she's giving you cash, which is an intangible. However, if Representative Moline owns 40 acres of land in northern Minnesota and now lives, as she's decided to, change her domicile and residence to Wisconsin, and she says, gee, I still like Representative Garofalo and I'm going to give him my 40 acres. That would be a Minnesota gift because its situs is in Minnesota. Similarly, if she owns a diamond bracelet that's generally kept in a safe deposit box in Minnesota and gives it to you, that would also, because that property is located in Minnesota, it's tangible property located in Minnesota, under the rules in Representative Mullery's bill, that would be a Minnesota gift too. That's a very uncommon kind of thing. You'd largely be talking about gifts of real estate where it's very clear that, gee, that's Minnesota property. You can't dispute it.
And Madam Chair, my last question, just to be clear, this is not at the current tax rates we have in law or even the proposed income tax increases that are being proposed. This is at a new 10% rate.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, yes, that's correct. And it's the sort of the more the reference point might be the estate tax rates, which range from 6.4% to 16%. So this is sort of an average of the middle of those rates.
Excellent. Thank you, Manager.
Other questions for Representative Mullery? Representative Drazkowski, can I quick first ask that, well, I'll move House File 805 to get it before the committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, just trying to follow this discussion and understand it better as well. And I guess the question would be for Mr. Michael. Does this, what does this do then to federal conformity in this area? And, I mean, does this bill then affect the ability for farm families to be gifted, you know, portions of the estate over time in order to avoid the estate tax? How does it affect them?
Mr. Michael, and can you also add on that? Maybe you can explain that currently we don't conform in current law in Minnesota to the federal estate tax, and then how this would maybe, you know, have more nonconformity going on. But just so people don't think that we conform now and that this bill throws us out of conformity, because we don't right now. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Drazkowski, this, at one level, this conforms to the federal rules in that it follows the definition of what a taxable gift is, but the major point of nonconformity is that it does not conform to the federal exemption amount. So the federal gift tax has this $5.2 million indexed exemption. And this gift tax in Representative Mullery's bill is tied to the same Minnesota estate tax exemption, which is $1 million, much lower than the federal gift and estate tax exemption. And yes, if there were a farm family and one of their estate planning techniques, which is a common one for people with, you know, a fair amount of assets, is to give the estate away over the lifetime, because that's under the federal regime that results in less tax than if you hold the property and die, just because of the way the two different taxes are calculated and integrated together. And yes, in this case, under current law, that's a strategy that would totally avoid Minnesota estate tax, because there is no gift tax in Minnesota. And so if you give it away before you die, you avoid Minnesota estate tax. And so Representative Mullery's bill would make it more difficult to, you know, follow those kinds of techniques for minimizing estate and gift tax.
Representative Mullery, before we go back to Representative Drazkowski, you had more on that?
Thank you. Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Drazkowski, and subject to correction, as will probably happen from Mr. Michael, but vaguely, a lot of those kinds of transfers are generation-skipping transfers, which there's not only the federal gift tax on, but there's a generation-skipping tax, and I can't tell you how to compute it. I'm sure Mr. Michael can, but this would not, my understanding is this bill would not create that generation skipping additional tax. Is that correct?
Mr. Michael, I was kind of wondering about that too, the generation skipping.
I think this one doesn't pick that up.
Mr. Michael?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there is federal government has a generation skipping tax, which is intended to essentially tax transactions where you skip a generation. So, for example, if the grandparent makes a gift directly to the grandchild as a way so that the child does not incur a state tax on the ultimate transfer to their child, the grandchild. And Representative Mullery's bill does not, attempt to oppose an analog tax at the state level. So there would just be the one-time tax on a gift of that nature.
Senator Drazkowski, sufficiently confused?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm catching up a little bit, but I'm two things. One, I'm surprised that Representative Mullery didn't write that into his bill. but then, secondly, Mr. Michael, again, a $1 million lifetime limit, and then did you say $1,400 a year, $14,000 per year? Thank you.
Mr. Mike, I know we're kind of getting all over in your barrel, but it helps us understand. You know, there's this other issue out there, and you made me think of it, Representative Drazkowski, that Representative Davids was talking about earlier, and that is as it relates to valuing farm and what you can count. And there was this discussion with the Department of Revenue. Is any of that affected by this bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, no.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure, so we wouldn't confuse it. Okay, thank you. Other questions, Representative Schoen?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I probably need to start spending about 45 minutes a week with Mr. Michael here to get some college credits, but can you explain to me, and I'm back to the farmland, and let's just say it's hypothetical, but let's say there's a guy that's got four siblings and our parents have $4.5 million worth of ag land, and it's tillable. If they gift it to us in their will, and how does this affect that? Is it a tax on them or the estate as the full $4.5 million, but under the guideline, then amongst five siblings, it would be under $1 million apiece.
Mr. Michael.
That's the old.
So I realize there's a difference there, Mr. Representative Mullery. I'm just trying to wrap my head around this and learn.
Since Schoen, you've figured it out. The key to being a successful tax committee member is to hang out with House Research. That's right. We all know that. They're the ones who know everything. So, Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this the exemption is under the, well, first of all, since the transaction that you were talking about is a transaction where it's a gift by will, bequest essentially by will, it would not be affected by Representative Mullery's bill. That Representative Mullery's bill only covers transfers that are made while the donor is alive. The point you raised, though, about splitting it up four ways goes back to the difference between an inheritance tax and an estate tax. Minnesota repealed its gift tax when it repealed its inheritance tax and enacted an estate tax. And an estate tax looks at the total value of the property that's owned by the decedent at death, or then some lifetime gifts can be brought in as proposed by Representative Mullery's bill. And it assesses the tax on that total value based on a rate schedule. And an inheritance tax, by contrast, looks at who did you give the property to, and has different rate schedules based on that. The gift tax here does not follow that analog, but is based on more of an estate tax approach, where what you're looking at is the donor. So how much did the donor give over the donor's lifetime, and then applying the rate to that. So there's not a $1 million exemption for each recipient, but it's a donor exemption. So it doesn't matter if the donor's got five children and splits it up, five ways, or gives it all to one. The tax is going to be the same.
Representative Schoen, further?
Probably not.
Okay, Representative Mullery.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Schoen, yes, we used to have that, and it went away longer ago than some members of the legislature weren't even born then, back when we got rid of the inheritance tax. And at that time, the exemptions were extremely small. So almost every estate was covered.
Okay, Representative Earhart, then Loeffler, then Drazkowski. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. What does this do to the $14,000 per year? Does that go away?
Mr. Michael?
Madam
Chair. Or Representative Mullery?
Well, Madam Chair, it,
no.
Representative Mullery?
Madam Chair, I believe that we're adopting the $14,000, and that's an annual exclusion, as Mr. Michael said, to each person. So that would, you'd still have that as. Well, if you gave $14,000 to 100 people, what would you have? 140,000 exemption?
bipartisan it is?
No, no, it'd be 14 million. A big exclusion. you just add up those exclusions, and that would be an offset against the gifts you gave. And then the total of those annual exclusions, this would be a tax on what's over those.
Representative Earhart.
Well, I think you're saying that you're only allowing 100,000 gifts in.
Mr. Michael.
No. Madam Chair, Representative Earhart. First of all, on the by defining taxable gifts as taxable gifts for federal purposes, that's what preserves or provides the $14,000 current. That's indexed, so that'll grow over time. Exclusion per year per recipient. The $100,000 credit is a credit, and since the tax rate is 10%, if you divide 10% into 100,000, you get the $1 million exemption. So basically, a donor can give $14,000 per year to each recipient exempt, and then has a lifetime exemption of amounts over that $14,000 of $1 million. If that, I hope I didn't confuse you with that.
No, well,
I'm just trying to make sure, Madam Chair, that we're not taking away the $14,000.
No.
I wasn't sure if you did this. I think I am now.
Representative
Moore. Otherwise, you're going to drive those people right out of the city.
Right.
As fast they can get out.
Right. Representative
Laughlin. Thank you, Madam Chair. And as another student in the House Research School of Taxation, I have come to admire that many of the people around the table here from rural areas seem to know a lot about ag inheritances and estates and transfers. But for those of us who don't represent many ag businesses, do the same answers and policies apply for, like, someone has a little storefront business in my area? Is it all businesses are treated alike, or are the answers to the questions on ag estates different?
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, this bill really makes no distinction with regard to gifts as to the type of property that's being given. Under the estate tax, there are exemptions for qualified farm property and qualified small business property that have sort of complex rules, and I wouldn't venture to, they're not treated exactly the same. There are some slightly different rules that apply to qualified, in order to be a qualified small business, there are somewhat different rules. For farms, it's largely, or it is, basically homestead farmland is the simple way to think about it. Whereas with a business, it's business property, and you have to meet some additional rules, like you have to have materially participated in running the business for the 3 years before you die to qualify for that. Whereas with the farm provision, all you have to do basically, and it's a little bit of an oversimplification, but basically it has to be farmland that's classified as ag homestead for the decedent or the decedent spouse.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I know this isn't a hearing designed to teach us all the rules, but I'm just trying to figure out what I need to listen really closely to. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Raskowski, then Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I'm more confused than I was before, but Mr. Michael and Representative Schoen's example, then it was $5 million. So $1 million would be exempt, or up to $1 million would be exempt, so there'd be still $4 million of liability, whereas the federal, if we were to conform with federal, it would be the full $5 million, and we wouldn't have any liability for that farm. Is that correct?
I think that's right. But.
Madam Chair, Representative Raskowski, putting aside whether this property could qualify as qualified farmland or not under the $4 million exemption, that's correct. That basically, if it's a transfer either under under Representative Mullery's bill as a lifetime gift or as a bequest where you don't meet the qualified farmland rules. For example, because the inheritor is not a qualified member of the family or doesn't, you know, operate the farm for the 3 years, then you're absolutely right that there'd be $4 million that would be subject to Minnesota estate tax.
Thank you.
Representative Roskowski, just a thought on this. I don't know if you're in the room when Representative Garofalo imagined Representative Moline giving him $20,000. And I said it matters if they're alive or not. Okay, so Representative Mullery's bill, and I think we're getting confused a little bit on here, is for people who are alive.
Yes, Madam Chair.
The $5 million federal estate tax exemption that Minnesota does not conform to, and in fact we only let people exempt $1 million of the five, is the estate, people being dead. So if we conform to that separately from his bill, somebody carried that bill this year, I think it was Detmer, and we heard it was one of the first bills. I think it's $80 million to conform in the first year if we want to bump up to let people go to five. So that's what it would cost the state. And you can see bipartisanly, both parties have not done this because it's a very expensive price tag for a small group of dead people. So you can think about the politics of that for a minute. That's really how it plays out. So that's why I asked if Representative Moline would later die or still be alive. But to Representative Mullery's bill, I think, and I think this is where we would, you know, in the room have different views of this. This is an attempt, the way I always think of the gift tax, is an attempt to avoid deathbed gifts. People attempt to give away things and avoid the tax on their deathbed. And this prevents that from happening. You say at some point, you don't get to avoid the whole tax, but you have some exemptions that you can, over time, hit $14,000 a person or whatever it is. So if you disagree with that description, Representative Mullery, I'd appreciate hearing that.
Madam Chair, that's the biggest, by far, interest in this bill is the gifts in contemplation of death, which I asked Mr. Michael, but I believe we don't have right now.
Mr. Michael.
Do we?
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, that's correct. We do not. Once Minnesota went to a pure pickup tax, it repealed its old gift in contemplation of death rules, which I'm sure you were familiar with back when you were an inheritance tax practitioner.
Yes, then, Madam Chair, it's been about 20 years since I did a lot of federal estate tax planning, and so things are a little rusty upstairs. And I did have one, and Mr. Michael could maybe point it out. There used to be an active participant reduction on farmland if they were actively involved, whether or not they were farming, but they made the decisions. Now, did that go away with all the? There was a reduction based on that way back before.
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, there still is a provision in federal law that gives a valuation reduction for certain farm properties, but the way it was written, it got swamped when they increased the exemption above, I forget what the dollar was, it was like $1.5 million or something like that, so it's effectively not relevant now because the federal total exemption is substantially in excess of that qualified, I forget what the name of the, but it's a valuation discount where you allow farmers to have the value as a farm value as opposed to like a highest and best use kind of value.
Mr. Michael, can you just tell the committee what a pickup tax is? I know a bunch of people here know what that is, but there's a bunch who do not. So if you can, you reference the pickup tax, and just so people know what that is.
Yeah. Madam Chair, back before 2005, there was a federal law allowed a state death tax credit, which is that was the name of it, that was in effect from the 1920s through 2005. And under that credit, if a state imposed a tax up to the dollar amount of the credit, it was a dollar-for-dollar credit against federal estate tax. So if the state chose not to impose it, there would be no tax reduction for the estate. Instead, rather than paying tax to the state, they would just pay more tax to the federal government. So as you would expect, That caused all states to enact a tax that was equal to at least the amount of the federal pickup tax. Even states like Florida, Nevada, and Alabama, who have constitutional provisions that prohibited them from imposing estate taxes, amended their constitutions to allow them to oppose this pickup tax so that they would not allow this money to go to the, you know, to the federal treasury instead. Congress, in what we refer to as Egg Terra, the first of the Bush tax cuts, repealed that. Minnesota was one of the many states that had just that. Our estate tax was just a pickup tax, so the only tax through the late 1980s and 1990s that was imposed was the amount of that pickup tax. And what was done in 2001 was, when Congress repealed that, we said we're still going to keep imposing our tax as a pickup tax. And that's still the tax that we have. We don't have a real standalone tax with its own rates. Our tax is equal to what that old repealed federal credit would have been.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, then we're going to lay this one over and go to the next one. Representative Anderson.
Oh, you know what? Tara's got to
Rep. Talk. Please, Representative Mack.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. A little while ago, you were talking about, or someone mentioned, a generation where if you skip a generation and how this interacts, or if it doesn't. I was looking for clarification on that, and particularly if, just as an example, I'm in the midst of trying to talk my parents into paying for my kids' college tuition. And or at least starting a fund. And so anyway, I'm just curious, how does that work? I mean, and there's situations where grandparents possibly set up very large gifts for grandkids where it would skip a generation. How does this, what's current, does this or does this not interact with that? I'm just trying to look for clarification.
Mr. Michael. See, the suburbs was going to find a way into this bill, right? The rural, and we got the city. Now the suburbs are jumping into this bill. So, yes, thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Mack, this basically Representative Mullery's bill makes no distinction. So if, you know, if it's a gift from a grandparent to a grandchild, the same rules would apply that normally apply. What Representative Mullery was raising is that the federal government, to essentially plug what was considered to be sort of a gap in transfer taxation. So, I mean, it was a classic estate tax planning strategy for very wealthy families like the Rockefellers, you know, for example, to say, okay, John D. Sr., rather than giving to John D. Jr., would give, you know, set up a trust that would benefit the next generation down. So there was an interposing tax that called a generation skipping tax, both at the estate and gift tax level, to sort of prevent that from happening. Representative Mullery's bill does not do any of that, so it would just be a normal rule. Now, there is, just in your hypothetical, there are special rules that provide that if someone is paying for the educational costs, that then that's another exemption from the gift tax. So, and Representative Mullery's bill picks that up. So if grandparents pay for educational costs, there are special rules that essentially don't impose. And it's also true for medical costs. So if they, for example, pay for health care costs, those are not taxable gifts. We haven't got around to discussing that, but it's, okay. In your example, it obviously raises that.
Okay, and Madam Chair, so in that example, or paying for health care costs, the money would have to be given directly to the institution, I take it. It couldn't be given to, or into a college fund. It couldn't be given to the child, and then for that purpose, it has to go directly to the institution,
so
or into a trust.
Mac, if you pick out your kids' colleges so that your parents can give them money.
Sure.
Okay.
There's a lot of advanced planning.
Okay, thank you so much. Were there other, Representative Mullery, we have another bill of yours, plus another bill after that. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask if we could start to fill the hole in the general fund by charging for Mr. Michael's advice to members.
Right, yes, exactly. Representative Zellers and Runbeck. Representative Zellers.
Well, Madam Chair, and it is it's fun to have freshmen in here, and this is why I love tax committee, because you do learn something here every single day. But just for the record, I think somebody should be on record saying that the fact that we are in here going through all these machinations is why I don't like any of these. The gift taxes, the inheritance taxes. If you work all of your life, spend 80 years in a business, in a farm, you know, building a bank, whatever it is, a hobby store, and at the end you spend a better part of your dying days or dying months trying to figure out how to pass on a family heirloom like a business or your future for your kids or your grandkids, the idea that we spend all this time doing it is why I think these are a bad idea in the first place, with all due respect to Representative Mullery. But you earn it, you pay taxes on it when you earn it, and then when you're getting ready to pass it on or give it away, you go through all of this and yet pay another tax. So just for the record, Madam Chair, so that there's somebody on record saying that inheritance taxes and gift taxes are a bad idea.
Thank you for that, Representative Sellers. Representative Runbeck and then Benson, and then we really are going to the next bill after Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. And thank you, Representative Sellers. I think that that's incredibly important to remind people of, that it's a double taxation. I had a question, though, on just if we could find out how many other states are doing something like this. Do we happen to be one of the few or one of the few that haven't started to tax this?
Madam Mr. Michael, do you know that?
Madam Chair, Representative Runbeck, I thought that question would come up, so I prepared a table, which I will give to you rather than reading it. So I'll just pass it down.
Thank you, Mr. Michael.
Excellent. And maybe we can get that for the whole committee at, you know, the next meeting or something, too. So did you want to
thank you, Madam Chair.
Any of it there?
So it looks like we are one of the few that doesn't. we would be adding to the few that do. There's about 10, it looks like, that do. So.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. And then let's see, Representative, I can't remember. Benson, yes.
Real quickly, Madam Chair. You know, during the Revolution, we did get rid of entails and primogeniture, because we didn't want too many Downton Abbeys around, Representative Zellers.
Oh, okay. Thank you. We're going to lay over 805 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill, and now Representative, for you, Representative Mullery, House File 806, to come before the committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Representative Mullery.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, this one is quite a bit more simpler, quite a bit more simple. And this one really just plugs a loophole, which some people take advantage of, not in my district as much, because most people in my district don't have their family attorneys that they go to all the time and get tax planning from. But what this does is plug the loophole where, let's say somebody in my district owns a business and land store, and somebody in a certain other person's district owns a store right next to it doing the same thing, but they go to their attorney and set up an S corporation or a partnership or a trust or something like that, and put the store into that, and then they have their domicile elsewhere, then the person that didn't do that tax planning gets taxed in Minnesota, whereas the other person doesn't. And it's the same piece of property in the same business, so this closes that loophole of who does the tax planning, and which I don't think should be a reason for getting away without paying tax, I guess I'd say. And that's what the purpose of this bill is, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Would anyone like to testify for or against this bill? Discussion, questions for Representative Mullery? Anyone? If not, we're going to lay it over. Okay, we're going to lay over House File 806 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Mullery. And then we have Representative Dabney's bill, and I don't know if he's... Was he up there?
He was here.
Okay, so we're going to move... someone's going to tell him. I guess he's in the hall. So, Representative Benson, are you willing to move House File 426 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill? Okay. So, Representative Benson.
I do, yes.
Okay. Thank you. So, Representative Benson has moved your bill for you, Representative Dabney. And I know you were just in here and stepped back out, so we kind of caught you there.
You know, Representative Benson is always a gentleman, Madam Chair. I don't know if you've noticed that about him. Madam Chair, third bill on the agenda today, and I believe third time we're hoping is a charm on this one, or is it fourth time, Mr. Wally? Fourth time. House File 426, members, would change the point at which the sales tax is imposed on paint and materials used in the collision repair industry. Currently, it's imposed on the wholesale level. This would shift it to the retail level so it was more transparent and apparent to the consumer who's actually paying that sales tax regardless of where we impose it. Rather than have repair shops pay sales tax when they purchase paint and materials at wholesale, the bill would be allowed to the tax to be collected, as I said, on the retail value. And the bill provides a mechanism for repair shops to include the sales tax on paint and materials on the final invoice of their work. Again, the transparency piece for the consumer. This bill has been in the works repeatedly since 2009, and we're trying to get this remedy through for the auto repair industry. Mr. Kevin Wally, representing the auto repair industry, is with me here today and can answer questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Mr. Wally, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I'm Kevin Wally with the Alliance of Automotive Service Providers. The issue that has resulted in the auto repair shops absorbing this tax when they pay it at the wholesale level is that there's been no method to itemize the sales tax on the final invoice, and Representative Dabney's bill provides that formula, which is used in several other states, including the state of Wisconsin. It's a hours times dollars formula, which is customary in the industry, and that would indeed allow the final invoice to reflect the amount of sales tax that is being charged for the paint and materials. These are products that are used in the repair process and go out the door with the vehicle, and there's been no opposition to this proposal as it's been presented in, I think, the last three or four legislative sessions, but it does raise some revenue, and I think it's the fact that it's been a revenue raiser which has caused some concern.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wally. I have a question about that, Representative Dabney, and I don't know if it's for the department or maybe Ms. Templin would want to. I don't know if Ms. Templin knows or Ms. Von Mosch or maybe Mr. Mike. I never understand if it's a simple moving it from wholesale to retail, which seems like it's good economic policy to get it to final consumption, why does it raise revenue? I mean, that's what I can never get my head around on this bill. What is causing it to raise revenue if you're just moving the tax from here to here? Can someone explain that to me, or I don't know that one.
If you've not been able to get your head around it, I'm not going to try to explain it.
I mean, if we're just changing the tax of $2 from me to Ms. Jensen, it's still $2. We're just moving it down the line.
In the revenue note,
I think that is the problem with this bill. People view it as a tax increase,
right,
but it's written that it's not. So,
Madam Chair, on the revenue note, I believe that the assumptions that are built into the revenue increase are explained. I think they say the estimate assumes that the paints and supplies are marked up 25% between when the business purchases them and when they're invoiced to the final customer. That's the assumption that has driven that. That is the heart of the matter. And then it's reduced from there by some other assumptions that come into play. And so there is a net effect of an increase. And so it's based on their forecasts and their calculations.
Ms. Von Mosch, do you mind commenting? I hate to put you on the spot because you probably haven't been able to talk to the folks who work for you who are actually working on this one, but it is a curious thing. I just wonder, so Mr. Wally is citing the third bullet on the back side as, you know, and is that a typical part of the revenue estimate process? I just And maybe you need to check with someone and get back to us next time. But Ms. Von Mosch.
Madam Chair, members, Susan Von Mosch from the Department of Revenue. I have not talked to our research people about this estimate, but I do believe just reading it myself right now, and I would concur with what Mr. Wally said, is that by changing it from a wholesale taxed at the wholesale level to the retail level, there is the markup. I can go back and check with our research people and see if there is anything other than that involved in the revenue gain from this bill, but I believe that is it.
Okay. Thank you. I'm just curious. I do think that's what made legislators, particularly when the majorities were flipped, really reluctant, because it's viewed as a tax increase because there's a net gain. But I think the interest, as I've heard it, and I think Representative David's, when he heard it, you know, it's the auto repair industry who's looking for a tax cut, really. At least not the responsibility of it.
Well, and Madam Chair, I think they're put in the situation of absorbing some of the tax that they're paying at the wholesale level. So they're paying it, not the final consumer, and the final consumer doesn't see that the tax is there.
Representative Grostkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Wally, back to kind of what Representative Dabney was alluding to, what are businesses doing now? Obviously, this would, as Representative Dabney said, create the transparency of where the tax is being paid. But aren't the businesses, I would expect they're building this cost into the price they charge the consumer and marking it up. Is that what's happening, and is that normal behavior for businesses to do that when they receive this oppressive tax from the state?
Madam
Mr.
Chair.
Mr. Wally.
Madam Chair.
Nicely done, by the way.
Representative Drozdowski. One of the issues that has really driven this as an important priority for the repair industry is that they indeed eat the cost of the wholesale tax, because the way that the auto repair estimation systems work, there's really no mechanism in the three accepted software programs for doing estimates for building in or putting a line item in for the wholesale tax that you've paid on these materials. And so they've been sort of stuck with the estimating systems not accounting for the extra expense of the wholesale tax, and they basically absorb it at the shop level. And their perspective has been that this is product that goes out the door on the vehicle at the retail level, so if we have a mechanism to itemize it on that final invoice, that's an appropriate place to do it. But we've lacked that formula, and we've not been able to itemize, you know, X ounces of paint and X ounces of primer and that sort of thing on the invoices. It's just not possible, because you buy in some volume and then you use a portion, and so that's why the formula is being requested as the mechanism to account for the tax at the retail level.
Representative Drozdowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Mr. Wally, I would expect that that the prices reflected at the retail level would have been adjusted for this over time. Let me put it another way. If that wholesale tax was to go away, would retailers find the ability to lower their price in order to be more competitive with other states and at least those around the border of the state of Minnesota?
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Drozdowski, I think the answer to the question is yes, that if a tax was removed at the wholesale level, that might make them more competitive.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Wally.
Thank you. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm wondering if staff can tell us if this is would potentially create a precedent that we would have other industries that buy things and pay sales tax, and then, you know, I'm thinking of the whole home remodeling industry. They buy paint and wallpaper and countertops, mm-hmm. and, you know, I mean, are there other similar industries that have approached us about this, or would this be a unique first?
Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, there are other industries, and yes, you've identified the construction industry as a major industry where they pay sales tax on their construction materials, and then they do not charge, and they build that into the price. So when you buy a house or you pay for remodeling or something like that, You aren't paying sales tax on the remodeling contract or the building contract, but the sales tax paid on the building materials is built into that. I have not heard from anybody in the construction industry thinking that they want to do this. I think the auto industry is a little unique in terms of it's much harder to identify exactly how much paint went into fixing this ding as opposed to how many pieces of, how many 2x4s and things like that went into building this building. So I think it's a an accounting issue for the auto industry that may not exist in some of the other industries. But there may be other industries where this is an issue.
Representative Walker.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I don't know if they're that unique. I mean, it may be unique that they have this computer program and it doesn't adjust the way they want it to adjust, but you know, I know I met with a local remodeler who had concerns about tax policy, and he uses the database to do his estimating. And so, I mean, it just feels like the same thing. I mean, now we have less choices of paint. At one time, I think when you bought a car, you had a choice of like 80 or whatever it seemed like. You know, now they're more standardized. But, I mean, I always would assume that if I'm having my car repainted, they're mostly going out and ordering from my manufacturer that particular color. Now, maybe that's not as true for the shellacs or, you know, clear coats or things like that. But, I mean, I'm just not sure. I'm just thinking out loud about what is the unique difference here.
Madam Chair, I was thinking there's a number of things that get built into services and things like that. This would be like exempt services. Car repair is an exempt service right now. Legal services are an exempt service. This would be like saying your lawyer could charge you a materials fee for photocopying and things like that. So I think that might be more of a comparable thing to be thinking about.
Okay, further questions? If not, we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax. So thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members.
And members, Representative Marquardt, would you be willing to move the minutes of February 26th and 27th?
Madam Chair, I so move the minutes of February 26th and 27th for approval.
Thank you. Questions? All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries. Those are adopted. And I just want to remind members, we handed out the February 27th minutes. That was the evening hearing, the first one, the 5-hour one on the governor's bill. And does anyone have changes? If you do, please bring them to Ms. Kunisch because we'd like to approve those at the next meeting. She's working diligently on the Friday meeting minutes, so we'll be asking you for feedback on that too. So thank you very much. I'm going to quickly refer down to Division House File 1092, Poppy, 1128 Metza, 1129 Metza, 1161 Dill, 1177 Hanson, 1268 Sundin, 1303 Keel, 1327 Metza. Thank you. We're adjourned.